According to a new study from Texas A&M University, 90% of married couples who do this say it made them less satisfied with their marriage. Guess what 9 out of 10 couples say will make marriage worse? Boy, what we're going to end up with here is a whole bunch of don't do this, a list of things not to do in your marriage. You ready?
I'm ready. I'm the only one who knows in this room. I know.
I didn't want to see it, so I wouldn't let Joe show it to me. Eric knows what it is, right?
I do, and it scares the bejesus out of me.
All right. Is it Carrie? Go ahead.
Divorce.
That would certainly make your marriage worse, but that's not it.
I don't know. But 1 out of 10 says it really improved.
Made my wife laugh.
All right.
Thanks.
It did make me laugh.
I've had friends get divorced. So that was the best thing for their marriage. They wound up remarried.
Tim in Bellingham.
Yeah, let's try a vasectomy.
Getting a vasectomy would make your marriage worse? Why?
Doesn't mean it always is going to happen. Like the promise might be said.
Oh, if it doesn't work.
Well, no. You know, if we go ahead and go through with this, you know, it's going to make things easier to, you know, make it happen all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't always work that way.
Oh. Did it make it worse, though?
No, I guess not. Not so much.
But it's a good answer. Thank you. Just...
If they mess it up. Yeah.
You got one of them yet?
No, I'm thinking about it.
You going to get your vasectomy?
I really should because... You know, I saw Sean Penn and his lovely wife are separating, and they have an 18-year-old and an 8-month-old or something? Or is that who I saw? I saw somebody that said they had a pretty wide range, and I don't want
more kids now.
Yeah, I don't want that.
You're sure you don't want another kid?
Oh, yeah, not at this point. No.
Nah.
No.
Now you're ready to just veg out.
Well, no, not veg out. I took that to heart, that study about it, living to 100. You can't just sit in front of the TV or sit on a dock fishing. I got to work till I die now just to keep living.
Mike in Everett, what will 9 out of 10 people say if you do this, you'll be less satisfied with your marriage? What is it?
I'm thinking wife swapping.
Wife swapping. That's not it. I have no experience in that area. Do you? Anybody? Joe?
Nope.
Maura, any wife swapping?
Never swap my wife or anybody.
Nope. Eric?
I've only been with 2 women in my life, so no.
Same time? Lucky man.
No, he didn't.
One with a stripper, though.
I can imagine that would seem like a fun thing to do, but it would introduce challenges.
I've known people who have, and I think every single one of them
regrets
has broken
it.
Up.
Everyone broke
I think
up.
Every single one.
Do you know anybody, Mark?
Yeah, we did.
Hold on. Go to the mic.
You and your ex?
Yeah.
Ex.
You
again.
Did wife swap? Oh, good. We have someone in the room. All right, Mark. Mark the intern.
In the beginning, we did. She was involved with a woman, and unbeknownst to me, I'm oblivious. So I was like, hey, you're cool. You want to hang out? Didn't pick up that she had a girlfriend. And we ended up dating, and... The relationship went in a direction that sowing the oats, as they say, and we are not together.
This was your wife?
Yes.
Can you translate what he said?
She got the camcorder out, he got the curb.
Oh.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So you thought it would be fun, and you thought it would be cool, but it wasn't.
A lot of roles got involved, a lot of hurt feelings. There's always like...
Wait a minute, it was fun and cool, right?
Indeed, indeed.
For how long, though?
Well, you know.
He's embarrassed.
Fuses burn
he's
hot.
Red as a bee.
Yeah.
Burn hot.
For a guy who's the spitting image of Howard Stern, he's unbelievably embarrassed and shy. That's something about Mark, our intern, by the way, that you should know. He looks like this extremely highly paid, famous radio guy. And
lucky
to the point where people stop him on the street. It could be Rush Limbaugh. You'd be a lot worse off.
And I actually do get
wife swapping
quite frequently.
Wow, I thought you meant swabbing.
But you're short. You're not as tall as he is. He's known for being tall.
If you put me in the back of a limousine, I can get away with it. If I'm sitting down, we were at in Vegas, and several women came up and had to ask. And when we were at the Imagine a Cure, I had several people.
People thought that Howard Stern came to our benefit.
True, honestly, funny. Scout's honor.
Okay.
So back to this wife swapping thing.
Yeah.
Did you swap your wife for another woman, or was there another man?
It was two women and her boyfriend, my wife. We were.
Oh, okay. So there was two couples.
There was some swapping involved.
Yes, and there were roles involved, and he was not as engaged. He was more of a.
All right, I want a clade swap. nothing above the belt.
Exactly. I was like, how can you have?
Oh, you had the rules.
I want everybody to tap out when you need to tap out.
So there's exactly.
And that's like, what I heard is that the people who do it say
touch
they have
condoms
rules.
And come out loving. Ready?
But it created not so much for her and I that it was no longer it wasn't really an issue. I was like, well, gee, it seemed a lot better in my mind. I was actually quite confused, you know. There's four sets and only two hands of Mark. And so, not a lot going around.
Good. And really, really going too far here.
Okay, Mark, thank you very much. Put that water on, please.
It's way too complicated.
You're confusing wife swapping.
It is. You know, my wife always says to me, like, don't you wish you had a blah, 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 whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I always go, I can barely handle you.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. One is enough. Yeah,
my life is so complicated already. What do I want to do? Make
that's
it worse?
I use another
I mean, make it.
It's like Obama. You think I really want big government?
Two wars?
Yeah.
Economic collapse?
I got plenty on my hands here.
Okay, so it's not swapping. Gordon in Spanaway. 9 out of 10 couples who've done this say it makes them less satisfied with their marriage. What is it?
Have sex.
Have sex?
That's not my real name.
Oh.
You have our sympathy.
All right. Yeah.
How about
don't guess anymore.
How about you and Mark go have a cup of coffee? You guys have a great conversation.
Mark, I'm going to put Gordon on hold. You can have a cup of coffee with him. Larry in Kenmore. 9 out of 10 people who've done this says it makes your marriage worse. What is it?
Cheating.
There's an obvious answer.
Yeah.
And I would suspect that's true, but it's not the answer we're looking for.
Okay.
Greg, and I've also heard the opposite. I've heard that people who went through a situation actually became stronger afterwards. Depends.
Battle tested.
Greg in Bremerton, what is it?
Hey, guys. This is Greg at Vigor over here at PSNS. I'm going to say counseling.
That marriage counseling can actually cause problems and dig up dirt.
Yep.
Huh.
Text messenger says, marriage counseling ended my second marriage. She learned that it was all my fault. So maybe sometimes it doesn't.
Well, you got to hire the right counselor.
Well, ain't that the truth?
All right, that's a good answer, but that's not it. A good guess, I should say. I think if you're with a great counselor, it's up to you.
Well, there are great counselors and there are hacks.
So I'm getting the feeling that the answer is something that you would think would help.
Not necessarily, but it could be.
Do you know now?
I know what it is now. Willie at Boeing, hello.
Yeah.
If you do this, 9 out of 10 married couples say it'll make you less satisfied with your marriage.
Discussing premarital sex.
If you have premarital sex, then when you get to the marriage, you'll go, this isn't, why did I give up everything for this? Is that what you're saying? It. Not me, I wouldn't say that.
I hope not. At least not out loud, with your outside voice.
Is that what you think?
Yeah, that's it.
Nope, that's not it. I don't know. There's many ways any of us would actually know. We have no frame of reference for that, right? We all had premarital sex. Everybody in this room.
Not together.
But we all did it.
We all had, and we all, I believe, we've all done this. And I don't know if our marriages are better or worse for it.
Mary in Seattle.
I would say role-playing, like playing out fantasies.
Role-playing fantasies, which are rumored to be good for you, would not be good? No, that's not it.
Wow, Robin Hood, you're here. Oh, boy.
Nick in Auburn, hello.
Sharing a bank account.
Sharing a bank account, bad for a marriage? I view it the opposite. I think keeping your finances separate is bad. But I'm just a traditionalist. No, that's not it.
The more intertwined you are, the likelier you are to stay together, I think.
Christy, 9 out of 10 couples who do this say it's bad for their marriage. What is it?
Me?
Yep.
Christy, sleeping in separate bedrooms.
Sleeping in separate bedrooms. Joe, you do that. Is it bad?
Sometimes we do, not all the time.
Okay.
Well, I don't know if it's bad.
I blame Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore.
Well, they were just following the rules.
Lucy and Desi. Yeah. No, that's not it.
If you got a snorer, sometimes it makes for a little more peace in the house.
Richard in Camas.
Hello.
What do you think it is?
I think it's working together.
Working together. Some people can, some people can't. What about the husband and wife couple on the top 40 station in town?
They've had problems.
Jackie and Bender.
But they've stayed together.
They've stayed together.
Yeah, yeah. How about Pedro and Luciana?
Oh, we're incredibly happy.
They've had problems.
Very, very happy.
But they've stayed together.
But they've stayed together.
Yeah, but they've stayed together.
Did those guys discuss their problems on their...
No.
All right, so we're not either.
Happy face.
How about your problems, Pedro?
We used to discuss them on the air. It's pretty therapeutic. I mean...
Do you have any problems that you don't discuss? If so, please list.
Okay.
Careful.
No, we don't have. We always discuss absolutely everything to each other. We don't care.
All right. We should just get to the winner. Here's what's.
Some of these, I'll jump there, buddy.
Some of these are interesting. Mike in Spanaway says 9 out of 10 who've done it say that
changing religions
would be bad for your marriage. Changing religions mean like from. Republican to Democrat, like Arlen Specter?
No, more like from Buddhism to Judaism.
Wow.
Until we joined the Heaven's Gate cult, we weren't happy, but now we're going to go on forever together.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. That's not
shoes.
It. Tammy in Burlington.
I have two.
Okay. You can only give the one you gave to the call screener because we may already have a winner.
Signing a prenup. And filing for bankruptcy.
No.
Way to cheat, babe. Way to cheat.
Sneaking one in there.
That's what wrecks a marriage. Sneaking one in, yeah.
Bill in Gig Harbor, what wrecks your marriage? 9 out of 10 people who've done it say?
Arguing about finances.
Boy, I think that's probably the number one thing that hurts marriages. I really do. But it's not the one we're looking for. Ben in Auburn. Ben.
Viewing pornography together.
Viewing pornography together?
Yeah, I hear it.
You hear? How did you hear? Who talked to you about it?
I can tell you that's
the
not true.
The counseling that I went through. It's not true.
No, it's not true. Unless one of the members is in the porn.
That could ruin your marriage.
That can ruin a relationship.
Yeah. Thank you, Ben.
Honey!
Wait a minute. That's a black wig. watching Oprah, I like that. Jim, it's not watching Oprah, but thank you for that. Okay, Tom in Issaquah says...
Hi, guys. I think staying up later than your spouse, not going to bed at the same time.
Going to bed at different times. If that were the case, none of us would have stayed together, right?
That's a marriage saver, dude.
That's a necessity.
I know. It sucks, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Someone was asking me this morning. I lost my keys this morning. Is your wife asleep when you come in? Oh, hell yeah. And if I... if I make the floorboard creak in the wrong way and she's not asleep,
mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
then I'm a terrible person.
Now, do you wake up when she comes into bed at night?
Not anymore. Mm-hmm. Although, once in a while I do, and them's a happy evening. That's a good time.
Never saw Kelly use WD-40 in the bedroom before yesterday.
Hello. She used WD-40?
Yeah.
Overshare.
Not on me.
On herself?
On the creek.
That reminds me of the...
Now it comes in lavender. Super.
That reminds me of the Wizard of Oz, actually.
I was waking her up with our bedroom door. It was creaking. After I went to bed, I hear the pss, pss, pss. What is that? It's her greasing the door thing, yeah. So it doesn't creak in the morning.
It sucks going to bed and getting up at different times, but it can work. A lot of couples do it. We have so many,
If you have to, you have to.
Yeah, we have so many shift workers in our audience.
Right.
All right, we do have the winner. We've had it for a while, but these are good. Discussing politics. Is one that Tom in Seattle brought up, and that can certainly hurt a marriage, but that's not it, Tom.
Oh, okay.
All right. My wife refuses to discuss or vote with me, still to this day.
We're lucky that we are of a like political mind, because that can destroy
You're like Political Minds?
With Melissa, yeah.
How boring.
Yeah, well, it's fine. I guess I could have married somebody with no heart or compassion. That probably would have been more exciting for you and the rest of the show. But
Lisa heard that you were dissing on her yesterday, by the way.
I was dissing on her?
Yeah, you were.
I was dissing on you.
You said she was the most controlling wife. Oh, am I the one that's controlling? I thought you meant her.
Not what I said at all. Boy, your memory's going as bad as your ears.
Charlie and Edmonds, hello.
Hello.
All right, the 90% of people who do this say it makes them less satisfied with their marriage. What is it?
Having a child.
Having a child.
9 out of 10?
9 out of 10 say it makes them less satisfied with their marriage.
Wow.
But I think they're short-term thinkers. You know why?
No.
Because it's challenging at first, and it's a long-term proposition. It's an 18, 20, sometimes 25-year deal.
You're here. I'm hoping
sometimes
for 25.
30.
And what happens is initially you go, what have I done?
Uh-huh.
And then eventually you go, wow, I've done something really amazing and good. And it gets to live on, and you know it gets to be all the gifts I've given it get to be given to someone else.
I would love to talk to whoever did this survey.
He's on the phone. Dr. Brian Doss of Texas A&M University, who did the survey, is on the phone. Hello.
No one at home believes that was natural, by the way. No one.
Yeah. Doc, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much.
All right.
Doc, I got questions, dude.
Okay.
How old were your subjects?
We started following them when they first got married, so they were typically in their late 20s.
And how long did you follow their... Father lives.
We followed them for, well, they're still actually still being followed by the University of Denver. Two of my collaborators up there were really kind of the ones who ran the study. So all these couples were in Denver. But we used the first 8 years of marriage for this.
I knew it.
Why?
Because I think that you are asking people who are raised in a very narcissistic, what about me society.
Oh, you mean you think that's today's people? That you're better than this generation?
Doctor, we'll tell
by
you
the way, Doc, feel free to argue with them. You hear we are.
Doc, I think that when you talk to people in their 20s, they were raised in the MTV, what about me, why aren't I a star yet generation? And these are people who are so self-indulgent.
Well, these are the people we need to study now. You're not having any more kids. You barely got one nut. You're lucky if you get a little use out of it.
Doc, jump in and defend me anytime. Okay, I'm sorry, Doc. Go ahead, give any kind of...
Well, who else should he study?
50-year-olds who've had kids. See if it wrecked their...
Oh, you'll get... that's a good point, and I had the same point, Doc. You'd get an entirely different result if you asked people at the end of raising their kids, right?
Well, that might be. What we did for this study, you know, the problem is with kind of the types of things that you're suggesting, kind of comparing, you know, people in their 50s looking 20 years back, is it's really hard to know kind of retrospectively kind of what your relationship looked like 20 years ago. So what we did for this study is we actually asked couples every year, you know, before they got married, the first year of marriage, second year of marriage, and so on, to report just how happy they were in their relationship, and we brought them into the lab and had them discuss problems in their relationship, and we coded those interactions and things like that. So we're able to get a lot of really objective data every year from these couples.
Objective in that they didn't know what the conclusion was you were going for, of course, because you'd never want that in a study.
Right, correct. But also just, you know, we knew kind of, okay, well, you know, compared to after birth, what was going on before birth and vice versa. We were able to show that after birth, there is kind of this immediate drop in relationship functioning, both drops in positive things about the relationships and increases in negative things about the relationship.
And obviously you were talking to couples of childbearing years, but were you talking to couples in their 20s, or were you also talking to people who might have had kids later in their life
when they were more mature?
Most couples were generally in their late 20s, just because that's when couples generally get married, at least in this country. But there was some variability. We were looking at first marriages for the purpose of the larger study, which was kind of looking at the effectiveness of premarital education. So that's
what else? I'm sure your study must have found out some other things too. Anything helpful other than don't procreate?
Well, let the planet die.
I think the take-home message from the study is that when we looked at parents, they did show these immediate drops, but when you look kind of longer term and compare them with parents and non-parents, they were essentially showing about the same declines in relationship satisfaction. It was just that those declines were really concentrated after the birth of the first baby for parents, whereas for non-parents, they were more spread out through the 8 years.
So people are going to get sick of each other whether they have kids or not. Your marriage is doomed, right? That's the basic conclusion here.
Yeah.
If you, depending on kind of one of the, how you're defining it, so the 90% statistic that you're talking about is just a rating of how happy I am in my relationship, just kind of a very kind of face valid, those types of things. But if you were talking about fulfillment or satisfaction with life or other things like that, you might see, you know, stability or perhaps even increases over the lifespan, but it is a pretty replicated finding.
Stability isn't one topic. There are a bunch of different factors.
Doc, what did the subjects say was the, what did they list as unsatisfied? You follow me?
Well, we saw declines in just kind of overall satisfaction. We saw increases in the number of problems that they were experiencing in the way that they were discussing those problems. So when we brought them into the lab.
Well, specifically, Doc, that we couldn't go to Vegas anymore. My butt got flat. What kind of unsatisfied people are we talking about?
Well, what the studies would generally suggest is that the biggest problem that couples have after birth is really the division of labor and how to deal with all the additional things that couples need to do with a child.
Yeah.
And that coupled with the declines in kind of just the quality time that couples are able to spend together, all the spontaneity and things like that really become a lot more difficult.
Hey, Doc, so I have a weird question for you. I know we're a little low on time, so I don't mean to rush you.
No,
but
let's go ahead.
But looking for something positive, does this mean maybe we ought to teach people in school a little bit about raising a family, a little bit about planning ahead for all the things, you know, like girls get a little bit of sex education, guys get basically nothing, girls get a little bit of home economics or something they call it, I don't know what they call it today, you know, it used to be just like an easy bake oven shared by 500 kids.
Life skills,
life skills,
is what they call it.
Yeah, should we do more with regards to raising a family in this modern age?
Generally, I would say yes, and I think especially for the birth of the first baby, the really natural place to do that is childbirth classes. You know, when you go to a childbirth class, it's really all focused on the birth of the baby and breathing exercises and things like that.
Ice cubes and breathing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But nobody talks about kind of, okay, you know, what happens after you bring the baby home? What is that first night going to be like, and how do the two of you work together to do those types of things?
Dr. Brian Doss, Texas A&M, who did the study. Thank you, Doc. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Marriage, love, and marriage.
Lots of parks setting up a special area for dogs. This particular park is setting up a special area for
smokers.
Nope. Mm. Gay men.
Well, kind of smokers. Okay.
Basically, they have special areas for families, special areas for dogs, and gay men were using the park to meet each other. I believe they call that cruising, right, Joe?
Yes, and there's rumors that a couple parks in Seattle with heavily wooded areas have been used for that in the past.
Woodland. I'm not going to Heavily park. Wooded Park. Just
Heavily Woodland Park.
I'm
not naming any names.
The news all
we'll be out in my favorite park.
Sorry.
So, in this particular park, they decided to put up a sign designating certain areas of the park as gay cruising zones. I do not know what the sign looks like.
Two guys holding hands. Just two stick figure guys holding hands.
Are you sure?
Yeah. I mean, I've heard.
Yeah. This. Would you accept this in Seattle?
This is in Holland. And the Dutch, this is the way they do things there. You know, the red light district is there.
Red light district, the tie stick.
The hash bars are there.
The hash bars.
If you don't want to go, you don't have to go. And then they've decided, well, this is happening anyway. And
as long as they keep it away from the swing sets, you'd be okay with it.
Right, it's pretty
uncomfortable. So you'd endorse this in our area.
Just so is the sign, if there was a mixer, like a place where people just wanted to... A designated mixer area in a public park.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you know, that's not what they're... They're not just going to walk up to each other. Hi, how are you? I'm going to give you my phone number. That's not how it works.
Hey, you want to look for snipes in these bushes?
that's hard for me to say I endorse.
Yeah.
But I can...
Snipe hunting is ugly. It is.
You know, I
don't even know what that is.
It's a joke.
Oh.
I've gone snipe hunting.
Is it Senator Snipes?
No.
Snipe hunting is a whole different story.
What is that?
To do? It's where you get a bag and you go out into the woods. Look, you've never gone snipe hunting? I'll take you sometime.
I've taken a bag into the woods, but tell me more.
There's a sign for
I'd
that
have
too.
To show you. Someday we'll go snipe hunting.
But what is a snipe?
You never seen a snipe?
No, it's a way. I mean,
we have to go.
We'll take more awesome. Too.
We'll take more and Bob. Yeah. Great.
I'm not going on some like initiation that I don't know what it is.
Well, you've uncovered our ruse.
Yeah, you
there,
guys
Sherlock.
Take Bob and let me know how it goes.
Hey, why are my hands tied?
You never went.
Oh,
to
we
camp.
Oil everybody down. Don't let it get you nervous.
You must have never gone to camp. That's usually where you'll go snipe hunting, is on a church retreat or something.
Yeah, we're getting off track here. Come on.
Although a snipe actually is a wading bird. So it is a real animal.
We got to take the fun out, Captain Cool. Atta boy.
But as far as that, I would, you know, just
you'd
so
be for it.
Just so it's not a blatant sign, like, you know.
I'm trying to help you out with your liberal buddies.
And you know,
I'm
watching
Fox News. Just tell me you're for gay people hooking up in the park and doing it in the bushes. Just say it.
If it wasn't, if it was, you know, a smaller part of the park, I mean, I don't want it to,
like over the back of the park.
I mean, here's the problem I have with this. First off, to me, it has nothing to do with being gay.
Okay.
I'm not for straight people doing it in the bushes in the park.
Right. Okay.
It has nothing to do with being gay. Now, I'm for people meeting and saying hello.
Okay.
And maybe perhaps enjoy having wonderful conversation, but I don't think you need a gay cruising zone for that. Gay cruising implies what a Republican senator does in a bathroom in Idaho.
Do you think it condones activities?
Yeah, I think it does condone it.
Okay.
Sure.
Because, I mean, if you're...
Well, who's going to say, I should hit that gay cruising zone this afternoon at 1 o'clock, other than someone who's fairly loose? I think people have no trouble meeting each other. That's my view.
Well, it's kind of it's like, optimistic. For me, it's like, you know, people are mad that they call Black History Month Black History because all U.S. history is Black history and yes. vice versa. It's the same mm-hmm. thing. If you're outside in a park, it doesn't matter. Like you say, gay
what would what you celebrate in Gay History Month if you were to have that? Because they're going to want that too now.
It's show tunes. It's great music.
Yeah.
It's
so all history is gay history. I mean, that's what I say to my
it's Katie Lang finally getting a gig. Yeah.
When I talk to people who like are you know, are scared of the homosexuals, mm-hmm. I go, dude, have you ever seen a show of any kind? Because you're patronizing them. You should stay home and you should get your TV out of your house.
Right.
Because they've infiltrated entertainment. And don't put up any drapes. Don't get your hair cut.
Yeah. Those clothes match. You're gay influencer.
Yeah. You know, and really, for clothes, no cool colors.
Mm-mm.
Those were all invented by the gays,
you
know.
Is that periwinkle? So you supported your lifestyle? Is that what you're saying?
So, I don't like this idea.
I wouldn't want it on a main thoroughfare where I would have to, like, walk through there to get somewhere else. Because what do? You look mean or, you know,
Joe, don't worry.
How do you try not to look gay?
Yeah, they know you're straight,
I think
Joe.
You're fine, Joe.
Just wear those sweats and that stained T-shirt. They'll know.
Yeah.
You look mean.
When
I'm in a part of town I'm not comfortable in, I try to make myself look big.
Their smell dar picks it up on you.
Have you ever been mistaken for being gay, Joe?
No, I don't think I ever have.
I have once. I've told that story a bunch of times. It freaked me out a little. Max in Eatonville, hello.
Hello. My only comment on the whole situation is the fact that it needs to be more of a broad description. I think it's going to, if it were to happen here, it'd be a huge uproar because they would claim that it'd be discriminatory against them. And I'm not gay, but I did have an uncle who was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of have a unique description on the whole situation. So I just think it's more discriminatory if they single out a certain party versus making it more broad.
How about like anybody can cruise anywhere as long as they obey the law?
Yeah, that's fine by me. It just seemed like it was very, very singling out people. Yeah.
Would Eatonville welcome a gay-friendly park? Because the name alone dictates it'd be a real popular spot.
Not particularly. Probably not Eatonville. Very, very straight.
Where are you going? Eatonville. We're going to do some snipes. I don't even know what that means.
Seattle-based Alaska Airlines is taking special precautions to guard against the spread of the flu. In a special report due to air this afternoon, the airline has pulled the blankets and pillows from its planes and is doing some extra cleaning. Vice President Joe Biden went on the Today Show and said, I wouldn't be flying anywhere right now.
I wouldn't go anywhere in confined places now. It's not that it's going to Mexico. It's you're in a confined aircraft. When one person sneezes, it goes all the way through the aircraft. I would not be at this point if they had another way of transportation suggesting they ride the subway.
Joe, you just...
You was that just, off his talking points, do you think?
We just destroyed an entire industry.
How can we kill the airline industry? Joe Biden, that's our man. Joe, well, can you get out there and say, don't fly, Joe?
On the other hand, I like a guy who's going to be honest, no matter how stupid his boss is going to think it is.
And in the next breath, he said it's easy to get overreactive.
Which borders do we close? Do we close the Canadian border, too, then Canada? Do we close flights coming out of countries in Europe where it has been identified now?
What's it going to take? Is it going to take me to leave this room right now and go stay in Puerto Vallarta for a week in a nice hotel just to prove it's safe? Because I'll do it.
You will?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let's get you an airfare right now.
Oh, you're threatening
Joe's
us now.
Sacrifice. Right he's now. Always ready to sacrifice.
So you fly to Mexico right now.
Let me go get my bathing suit and you pay and I'm on my way.
I'm finding an airfare right now.
I go too, Joe. Please, tag along with you.
Do you all think it's overblown?
They won't let Pedro back in. Let's not send him.
Brian says this. Brian?
I think they're talking about the swine flu to get by the news of the economy.
Boy, you know what? I'm so glad you called because I was thinking that. I was thinking that this is a wonderful distraction from feeling like we're in a death spiral economically.
To a death
spiral. Yeah, it could be the Chinese beetle coughs or the Korean dog shingles, you know, whatever.
KDS is an ugly illness. Unless you've had Korean dog shingles, you shouldn't make light of them.
All right. Yes. Thank you, Brian.
I have.
That's a great observation. Whether it's certainly not a conspiracy, but one of the side effects of this is that it's taking center stage in the news away from some other problems.
Well, yeah. And it's not the regular old flu. I mean, it's a new flu, and that freaks them out a little. They see this, they go, we've never seen this before. This is not the regular, right. We know what to do flu. So sometimes in human history, things like that have gone really bad.
329, we can get you to Puerto Vallarta. Leaving today, nonstop.
Round trip? Flight.
Yep.
Go to Priceline. Yeah. That's too much.
That's cheap.
$3 and 20.
Take a negotiator stance.
Check it out.
I will.
You really would go?
I'd go.
You throw caution to the wind.
You give me a week, all expenses paid in Mexico to sit there and drink
Why
Coronas
would I do
on
that?
The beach?
Why would I give you a week, all expenses paid?
To make America
to
feel better about
the audience, yes. For calm,
I
for
see.
Peace.
He knows it would never happen.
Peace of mind.
Would your wife let you go?
She wouldn't like it. But, you know,
it's not what he asked.
It's my job.
Yeah, it's the duty.
Honey, I don't want to go drink tequila. It's my job.
My duty to not just my job, but my country.
But you drink and overeat, and you were doing so well with the exercise.
The vice president of our nation just told us to shut down and not fly anywhere. That is pretty irresponsible.
That's un-American.
That is downright un-American in an aviation town.
Wow, this just in. Center for Disease Control has ordered a breath mask to be placed directly on Joe Biden. That's Pedro, people. Pedro Bartez, professional comedy writer.
These are the things that make Joe sound Republican.
Joe Biden is un-American.
That was a dumb thing to say.
I wouldn't fly. Gee whiz, with the flying monkeys in the air and everything, I wouldn't get on a plane.
Yeah, that's not good.
People coughing, sneezing, probably farting in the seat next to you. I wouldn't fly.
I'll fly anywhere you'll send me for free. I won't pay, but I'll go. Just so all I have to do when I get there is eat and drink and show people the food is safe. I'll eat pork. Only pork.
Joe's safe swine swing.
Joe will go on a pork only. Let's do that. Let's put you on a pork only diet. By the way, that wouldn't. It's the other white meat. That would not be bad for your diet.
No, pork is good.
Would you commit to eating only pork for a week? We can get news coverage on that, my man.
Pork bugs.
It'd be like Dick Gregory. You don't even have to leave the house. You just
pork
do
sausage.
Yeah.
Pork
sausage. And we'll buy the pork.
I'm close to an all pork diet anyway.
No, I don't mean pork like pigging out.
No, I've got my.
Would you eat all pork for a week?
I've got my food pretty well figured. I will eat all pork if I can supplement it with some barbecue sauce.
No.
Barbecue sauce is fine.
No, barbecue sauce is laden with sugar.
I'm not talking about getting him healthy. I'm talking about proving that pork is safe.
You're right. America. We don't need his health for that.
You don't like the barbecue industry? Is that what you're saying?
I'm getting healthy. That's why, I mean, I need to eat some vegetables and stuff, too. But I could skip the beef, although I do have a great piece of salmon Gary Crow gave me that's thawing now. I can't let that go to waste.
You know what? You don't care. I don't care.
Your heart's not in it.
Oh, come on. We got to go for this.
This is a tremendous opportunity for you.
All pork until this crisis passes.
No meat. All the meat you eat for the next week will be pork.
Wait. Until this crisis passes.
Until the crisis passes.
Cinco de Mayo is Tuesday, and I would love to have a big, like, pork.
Oh, carnitas.
Carnitas. Mexican band and a whole bit.
Zach and Monroe, hello.
Hey, Joe, I'm right there with you. I don't think the swine flu is a big deal. I think everything's safe. But you got to think about the mothers of these dead kids and the news coverage. They're going to destroy you because...
Because he's eating pork?
No, because he's trying to prove that it's safe. And they're going to say...
I have no doubt that the influenza is not a safe thing, but I also don't think telling everybody in the country to stay off an airplane is the solution to the problem.
Yeah, and Zach, the mothers of these dead kids, first off, we have one confirmed death, and it was someone who came here from Mexico, and it's very tragic when someone dies, but to say that that should clamp down on stopping your government from overreacting and going crazy would be very, very wrong.
My point. What I'm trying to say is all of America is, you know, paranoid about this swine flu, and the mother that lost her child, they're all going to be like, oh, we feel sorry for you. And then Joe goes out and says, it's perfectly safe. And then all of America is going to say, wait a minute.
All of America will despise you, Joe.
But
it's almost making it worth sending you to Mexico now.
I'll send you now. I'll chip in.
Sending the mother, and everybody is on the mother's side.
But I think the point that Joe's trying to make is that you can't get swine flu from eating pork, and every health official has said that.
What?
Every health official has said you can't get swine flu from eating pork.
Right.
And this has nothing to do with that kid until you said it did.
No, but I'm just saying what people are going to say.
People like who? Like you?
Well, no.
No
just,
smart people.
I'm just saying what other people are going to say, and even though none of them are saying it,
Hold on a minute. Let's clear up what you're angry about. Are you angry about the Joe flying somewhere for free idea?
No, I'm not angry about anything. I'm just saying.
He's just trying to protect. He's trying to cover our butt. He's he is our friend.
Exactly.
So.
I'm trying to protect your butt because Joe's going to go out there and say, look, the water's fine.
Well, wait a minute. No, you wait a minute, because you said...
How dare you insult her?
You said people are going to get paranoid, right?
People are paranoid.
Well, paranoid is not a good thing. Paranoid is an overreaction.
People
paranoid
reacting in fear is not,
yes,
not correct.
Paranoid is, we're not here for paranoia.
Yeah.
No, but because they are paranoid, people are going to... I don't know how to...
All right, I appreciate your caution, Zach. I thank you for it, in fact. Anastasia, hello.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Okay.
Just okay.
Well, I'm good, actually. I have a little sore throat thing, but I don't think it's the swine flu.
Oh, well, thank God.
Okay.
So what's up?
Oh, I called you?
Oh, okay.
No, you called me, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Eric tells me you had an idea for the show.
Yeah, I think you guys should all get together and have a last supper and eat nothing but pork.
A pork last supper.
I don't know if I'd call it last supper.
Well, if we didn't offend anybody with what the last caller said, this would do it for sure.
This may put us over the top.
Thank you. Thank you, Anastasia. Can you laugh again?
Sure. Tell me something really funny.
Okay. I like her laugh.
Well, like speaking of offending people, the text message said, Eric's the Jewish guy. Let him eat nothing but pork.
Let's go ahead and bring in our unexpected idol, because she's out there rehearsing. Hey, Susan. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, you brought a guitar accompaniment. Awesome.
Yeah, I wish I could play myself. But.
Oh, no, that's all right. You got a boy to play guitar for you. That's good.
Yeah, I take him wherever I go.
Is he like, yeah, does he wait on you 24/7?
I keep him in the trunk.
Okay. Let's get her a microphone. She's funny.
She like whips him out when he's needed. I like
that. Right. Susan.
Danini.
Susan what?
Danini.
Danini, yes. Okay. I had it in my head, but I didn't write it down.
Italian?
Italian,
you think,
Joe?
You
think?
Yeah.
Danini. All right, Susan, where are you from?
Seattle.
From Seattle. And you do sing karaoke?
No, actually, I don't do karaoke.
You don't do karaoke?
No.
Okay. And
I have done karaoke.
Right. That's like saying I have done drugs, but I don't do drugs. I got it.
I don't have a problem with karaoke.
Yeah.
Okay.
I control my karaoke use.
What kind of music do you love?
I'm sorry, what?
What kind of music do you love?
I'm kind of music eclectic. I like it all.
You like everything.
Yeah, a little bit of everything.
And that's your guitar guy. That's his name again?
Eric Ohana.
Eric and Susan. All right, what are you going to perform for us today?
We're going to do Hurt So Bad.
Hurt
Susan
So...
Susan Tedeschi.
Oh.
Or Susan Danini.
And you know what happens if you win this contest?
I get to sing with Spike and the Impalers.
Yeah.
Woohoo.
Or you can have this chocolate bar we have in the studio right now.
Okay.
Your choice.
And behind door number one.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, are we all set? Let's give her a nice welcome.
Yeah.
Unexpected Idol contestant for Thursday, April 30th, Susan Danini.
I miss the arms that used to hold me, the tender way we used to kiss, and I miss the way you used to touch me, baby, yeah. And I miss the sweet taste of your lips. I was a fool to ever leave you. And you were the fool who let me go. Why did you let me go? It's so lonesome here without you. Miss you so. Well, it hurts so bad, yeah. Oh, you are the best man I ever had. Why was I so blind to see? But now the biggest fool is me. Miss the arms that used to hold me, the tender way we used to kiss. Oh yeah, and I miss the way you used to touch me, baby, yeah. And I miss the sweet taste of your lips. It hurts so bad. I miss you. You know I miss you. So
You know what I see? You know what I see?
What do you see?
Somewhere I see the Pillsbury Doughboy crying over a shot of whiskey. And that little man is sitting there popping sad.
You want to take a swing at him?
Sweetie, I have never wanted to leave my wife till right now.
No. Right now. You are, I'll tell you what, you are amazing.
Thank you.
Just amazing. Where have you been?
Where do you sing?
You don't sing karaoke? You don't walk away with all the prize money?
No.
Laughing your ass off at the bus. See ya!
Where do you sing?
I sing in church, and I sing with another friend of mine who writes her own music. I'd sing backup for her. And then we're also in a blues band.
I must say, that is one of the most amazing voices I have ever heard.
Wow, thank you.
That is good. And I'm not just going all like, what's her name on you? You know, the one.
Paula. Wow, not, you're wonderful. Yeah. Where's my
You really
pool?
Moved me.
Wow.
But you did. Do you know what I was dreading?
What?
When it was over.
Oh. Yeah. Oh. Little tear.
Oh, yeah. All right, you want to hear from the audience?
Yeah.
Here we go. 1-800-252-1025. Susan Danini on Unexpected Idol. The prize? Well, the new Spy Cats are all going to be Unexpected Idols. That's what we're doing. That's right.
Oh, my God.
If we could talk her into it.
Alvin in West Seattle. Hello, Alvin.
West Seattle, woo!
Yes, hello. I think that was very good. I think much better than the original.
Oh, wow.
Welcome to Mumbai Idol. If I sent that to Derek Trucks, he might leave Susan for you. I mean, that's good
great
singing
stuff.
There. Yeah.
It's all in the name.
All right. Sean and Everett, hello.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
All right.
Yeah, I just wanted to call in and say that after I heard her hit that high note, man, sign her up. She's got that gospel smoky soul thing going on.
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
I just want to chain her to a radiator. That's all. Yeah, man, some good stuff.
All right.
No.
Mike in Marysville, go ahead.
Yeah, I would like to say that Susan's absolutely wonderful. I've watched her sing other places, and she's the best.
Oh, thank you.
And
wow.
I love you. And
is your mom?
No.
No. I'm her brother's girlfriend. But absolutely, she's the best.
Unbelievable. Thank you.
Thank you, Jen. That was so sweet.
This is Mike in Marysville. Mike, go.
Hey, good luck judging this one, boys.
I know. Yesterday's was really good, too, wasn't it?
Unbelievable, Susan.
Wow. Thank you.
I am so glad I'm not a judge on this one.
Going to be very hard. That's why there are three Spikettes.
Mm-hmm. Wow, the range. Susan, your range is absolutely phenomenal. That is awesome.
All right, Dale and Everett, hello.
How you doing?
Okay.
Hey, Susan, better quit her daytime job and start singing full-time.
Sweet. Okay.
How much do you make? You make a ton of money, though. Aren't you like a big software engineer or something? You got billions in the bank. And
right.
This is...
See? Yeah.
No, she's a 911 operator, so good luck on your own out there, people. Going to quit her day job.
Do you do any classic rock songs yet?
Yeah. What is the classic rock that we do? I mean, we sing such a smattering of everything. Yeah. Blues, rock.
Well, pick another song. We're going to let you sing a little bit into
crap.
The break.
Are you serious?
Just pick something else.
Don't play, man.
should we do the Aretha we were doing?
Aretha Franklin. Oh, I'm dying to hear this. Okay.
Which do you want faster or slow?
When a woman asks me that, I say,
I've only got $500. I guess you have to pick.
Fast.
Do you want Natural Woman or Chain of Fools?
Oh, let's do Natural Woman.
Oh, no. Okay.
All right, Chain of Fools? Do Chain of Fools.
I feel like Letterman. During the break, she's going to do both. The people at home are kind of screwed.
Susan Danini, go ahead.
The chain, chain, chain. Chain, chain, chain. A chain, chain, chain. Chain, chain, chain of fools. For 5 more years, I thought you were my man. But I found out. left a link in your chain. You got me where you want me. I ain't nothing but your fool. You treated me mean. Oh, you know you treated me cruel. A chain, chain, chain. Chain, chain, chain.
Susan Donnini with Eric.
A chain, chain, chain.
Another fantastic contestant.
Chain.
An Unexpected Idol. Be listening because the winners will be Spikettes at the next Spike and the Impalers gig, May 29th at Emerald Queen Casino. We'll be right back.
I might be weak, child, no, but I gain strength.
Casey Anderson probably read Gentle Ben when he was a kid. He's a lifelong outdoorsman and conservationist. And his best friend in life is an 800-pound grizzly bear named, what is it?
Brutus.
Brutus. The bear was even the best man at his first wedding, or his only wedding, I guess. Casey and Brutus are the stars of Expedition Grizzly, a new show on the National Geographic Channel. You'll meet the man, the bear, and get all the closest HD looks that you'll ever want to see at a grizzly bear in Yellowstone Park. Casey Anderson, welcome to the Bob River Show. Hello.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, good to have you. So you're like Siegfried and Roy are with their tiger Montague or Montecor, whatever his name was. But do you ever worry that the bear will freak out someday and take a swipe at you?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm very different than some of these people that have been injured by their bear and or their tiger or their chimpanzee. And the fact that, you know, I understand that I keep them being bears. I don't cross that line of respect. You know, Brutus lives at a sanctuary. He spends 90% of his time being a grizzly bear, wrestling, swimming, digging with other bears. 10% of his life is he gets to interact with me, but it's something that he wants to do.
How do you know for sure? I mean, did he text you that? Did he Twitter you? Did he... How do you know?
I spend my life, you know, observing and being around wild and captive grizzly bears, and you know, they're not as unpredictable as you think. They give you hints, their body language, they vocalize, they, you know. And if he's having a bad day, or if it's not a good situation, I don't put myself in it. I'm smart enough to know better.
What kind of bachelor party did he throw for you? Just out of curiosity.
It was a good one. He drank everybody underneath the table.
Bunch of honeys.
Sorry.
All right. So he's an 800-pound grizzly bear. You are, the sense I get from you is you're being very careful, because I'm sure that people come up to you all the time with, like, the, you know, what was it, Steve Irwin?
No, Steve Irwin, the Stingray, and the Grizzly Man, that very famous documentary.
Yeah, right. There's so many people have thought they had it under control and didn't.
Well, you know, if you've reflected Timothy Treadwell and even the crocodile hunter, you know, these are people that were in the business of kind of pushing the limits with animals, going into wild places with wild animals.
Very
and
fair.
Imposing themselves on them. When I'm out with wild bears, I'm a silent, you know, invisible observer. I'm not trying. I don't even want them to know I'm there.
All right, got it. Well, you know, we only ask these questions because we just care and we're concerned. So let's move on. Let's get to the fun stuff. 800-pound grizzly bears are frightening to most people. If you take away that they're predators and that they're a little more uppity than most bears, what are their lives like? Tell me a little bit about how, when a grizzly bear is born, how long does he spend with his parents, and then how does he go off on his own, and does he find his own territory? I got a million questions. Just give me a broad overview, if you could.
Okay, yeah, I mean, it's one thing that's amazing. When grizzly bears are born, they literally look like a fuzzy little Twinkie. They spend the first part of development inside the den with mother, and then they spend the next 3 to 4 years of their life with mom, and she's showing them where to eat and how to eat. And then once they separate from mom, they're very solitary. They're not a very social animal. They go out on their own, and you know, they'll live to be 30 years in the wild, and in captivity they'll live to be 40. So you know, they're a presence out there in the wilderness. You know, and very intelligent animal, very strong, very fast. I mean, they run as fast as a racehorse, and they can roll over boulders that weigh a ton. They're an amazing animal, and they're very intelligent. And you know, my joke is that, and it's very true, is that if they had thumbs, they'd probably take over the world.
I know your first episode is all about the bears of Yellowstone, which is kind of a, what do you call it, like a micro population or something? It's a, an island population?
Right, yeah, they live, you know, they live on this little island of, surrounded by people, I mean, roads and cities. So
would those be smarter than the average bear? Because of that?
In some way. I mean, you know, that analogy, the yogi thing, is very, very true. I mean, the bears in Yellowstone are not eating salmon. They're eating, like, pine nuts and grubs and moths. And if those food sources diminish or go away, the next best choice is, you know, the alpo on the porch.
Or the picnic basket, yeah.
Now, what makes those bears different from a big Kodiak up in Alaska? And if they were to come across each other, you know, in a neutral site, would they get along? Or?
Country bear city? Bear?
Yeah.
I tell you, the Yellowstone grizzly isn't as big as the Kodiak grizzly. The Kodiak grizzly gets to eat all that salmon and grow huge. But the way of life for the Kodiak is kind of laid back and easy, and the Yellowstone bear struggles. So just like people, you know, the Yellowstone bear is tough, and they're easily agitated because of their life struggle.
All right, I asked you, when do they leave their parents? What age?
About 3 or 4.
3 or 4 years old, they take them out. I had an interesting quote on last week that humans is the only species of animal that takes its kids back ever. So when a bear leaves, does he ever see his parents again?
It's an awesome question and something that I've witnessed in the wild. And I see these adult bears come together, completely separate situations, and they'll play. And they'll roll around for a few hours, and then they go their separate way. And then another time you see bears come together, and they don't get along, and they fight. And the only thing I can imagine, you know, think that that's what's happening when I see them playing, is it's either siblings coming back to each other or cubs coming back to their mom. And they spend some time. I mean, they're super intelligent. You know, if I was good to go away for 10 years and come back, Brutus would know who I was. Hmm. There's no doubt. And so, you know, this is interesting.
It's an interesting question because, our dog had puppies, and I was told that when the dog saw the puppies years later, she wouldn't know they were her puppies.
Well, you know, maybe they... I mean, I don't know how long she got to spend time with the puppies.
Not that long.
Beforehand.
Yeah. Wanted them out of there as soon as they were able. Yeah. All right, so he didn't give them 3 years. Yeah. Now, how about bear loving? Bear, you know, hugging and kissing and loving. There was a song about muskrat love. If there were a song about bear love, how would that go?
They like the back scratched. But yeah, be really careful with bear loving.
There is a song. Go. I like big bears and I cannot love them. Hey, you had some of the information that's in this show, we've got an advanced copy of it. The bears have a bite force strong enough to crush a bowling ball. Now, is this something you've witnessed in the wild? Was this at the bachelor party? Is this is a bar trick? How do you...
Yeah, no, I mean, they have 12,000 pounds per square inch of jaw pressure. I've watched bears in the wild go up to a bison carcass. Their femur is, you know, as big around as a big Angus bull and just bite it right in half.
Ouch. Back to the bear sex. You didn't even let him get anything out.
We were just scratching back.
So you say they watch the hockey game while they're doing it?
Yes.
They do.
I'm sorry I kept that from our
Thank you for coming down to our level. And they, now do they, and then they mate for life, do they not?
They do not.
They do not.
You'll like this one. You know, they mate year after year, but the female will not mate while she has cubs for those 3 years. So what the male bears come up with is that he goes in and kills and eats the cubs. She comes into heat, and he mates with her. So it is a sex-driven thing, and that's why female grizzlies are so defensive of their young, because half the time they're just defending them from the male bear.
From dad.
Yep. Wow.
So the male bear will get rid of the cubs to put her in heat again.
Yes.
Wow, that's very harsh nature, isn't it?
It is, indeed.
All right. What about bear old age? How long do they live?
The oldest bear I've ever heard of in captivity lived to be 53. On average, it's about 40, and in the wild, about 30. So they have a long, they're around for a long time. I mean, Brutus and I will be old dudes together.
You love Brutus.
Yeah, I mean, just like, you know, you're a good dog, you love your dog. You know, he's a very emotional creature. He enjoys hanging out with me as much as I enjoy hanging out with him. I respect him. He's my friend.
Would you want to have him to have some cubs with somebody?
Well, you know, that's...
my sanctuary is basically rescuing the animals that are in captive situations that can't get away. So all I would be doing is contributing to that. But with that said, Brutus is vasectomized and does have girlfriends, so I don't prevent him from having sex. I just prevent him from having babies.
Got it. Oh, so he's snipped?
He's snipped.
He's vasectomized. All right. And last question, Casey. This special is on National Geographic. If we take one thing away from this in our knowledge of bears that we didn't have before, what would you like it to be?
You know, that bears come with a lot of misconceptions. When you read about them, they've done something wrong, or you watch them on the big screen and they're being a big bad bear. But the truth is they're not that. You know, and they're an animal that's part of our American heritage, and we need to want to keep them around and protect them. I mean, they're important to us as a nation. And, you know, there's things that we can do as the adaptive species to allow this to happen. And we need to understand that and keep our eyes, you know, eyes open and try to understand these creatures and adapt ourselves so they can be around for a while.
Eddie Brill, not only a fine stand-up comic, but he's also one of the world's foremost experts on the art. He's the talent coordinator for the David Letterman Show. Been with Dave forever. Eddie's like a great baseball scout. He can tell you what the deal is with just about every comic in the country, from the legends to the up-and-comers. When he gets a little time away from Dave, Eddie does do his own stand-up all over the English-speaking world. And by the way, I got treated so nice by Eddie when I came down to see the David Letterman Show. He does a set before Dave comes on. He warms up the crowd. And I want to make sure I thank him for that. Eddie Brill, welcome back to the Bob Rivers Show.
Hey, it's great to be back and to hear Paperback Writer.
That's one of your favorite songs?
Yeah, you know, when as a comedian on the Letterman Show, you get to pick the music you come out to. And first time I ever did the show, I picked that. And one of the cool things about that song is that the Beatles sing Frère Jacques in that song, and you have to really listen carefully, but there's two sections of the song where the Beatles are going, Frère Jacques, and once you hear it, you'll never not hear it again, but it's in there.
Now that you've sung it to me, I'll never not hear it again.
Eddie, do you know why they're singing Frère Jacques?
No, I don't.
Because that song is a slam by Paul on John, because John had just written a series of short paperback books and considered himself a writer. And that was Paul slamming John's So You Think You're a Writer, and Frère Jacques is Brother John in French.
Oh, Brother John.
Fantastic. Oh.
Now you've got more for that story.
Stuff out later.
Yeah.
You know, an interesting story, not that story, but that I found out not long ago, is a friend of mine said, you know, in Young Frankenstein, the movie, the horses whinny when they say Frau Blücher, mm-hmm. and I thought they whinnied because she was ugly or whatever, mm-hmm. but it's because Blücher means glue in German.
Fact.
Oh.
Fact.
I had no idea, and I found that out. Well, weirdly enough, Mel Brooks came by the Letterman Show, and I said to him, I had no idea that Blücher meant glue, and he said, I didn't know that. He said, Gene Wilder wrote that part, and he never told me.
And I didn't find out. Isn't that great?
It's an inside joke hidden for years.
Yeah.
That's funny. Great. So, Eddie, how you doing? Everything good?
Everything's great. You know, everything's really good. I'm doing 10 million things at once, but there are things I loved, you know.
How is Dave? How is he doing? Is he's healthy? Everything's good? I mean, of course
he's
you're
really
going to say...
great, but he has laryngitis. He did the show last night talking like...
You saw it?
I saw the show. I taped it and saw it this morning before we went on the air, and I thought it was... when I first tuned in, I thought it was a swine flu joke.
Yeah.
I really did. I'm like,
he didn't tell any of us. He just, of course, the only people who knew it was the executive producer and the people in the dressing room beforehand. He walked out, and he usually comes out in the warm-up and says, and instead of calling me Eddie Brill, he calls me a different name every night, and it's like a theme. Like, one week it'll be all wrestlers, one week it's hockey players. And last night he went, and he kept pointing to the audience to stop applauding so he can say something. Ladies and gentlemen, the big head. And I'm like, what?
But he went, the show went on.
He did.
The show went on. That's who he is, you know.
Yeah. Shingles and heart attack and open surgery and all that didn't stop him. What's a little laryngitis?
Not at all. And I thought they'd bring, you know, Regis is on the show today, so we figured, you know, Regis will probably do all the talking.
Perfect.
And Dave is married now, finally.
Yes. Yeah. And that was a shock. You know, we're not best friends, but we hang out, and he's so good to me. He's actually more like my, you know, father. And weirdly enough, I have dreams like that, but that's a whole different show. But,
wow. He stopped hanging out with you around then. A little less.
But I, you know, when he announced it on the air, I looked around at, you know, the people who know him better and longer, and their mouths were agape as well. So he didn't tell anyone. I felt okay, you know. I thought I'm the last to know, but no, he just told the whole world at the same time.
All right. So now you, over the years, you're an expert on this whole stand-up thing, and you keep doing it yourself because you want to probably enjoy it and stay polished
at it. My favorite job. I have 10 jobs, and literally 3 full-time jobs, 2 at the Letterman Show and stand-up, and I do stand-up all the time. I used to do about 500-600 shows a year. Now I do about 200 a year, and I'm working every weekend somewhere, and I've been wanting to come back to Seattle for a long time, and this works out great. So yeah, no, stand-up's my favorite thing, and I also can look for stand-up comics. I was in Seattle in January looking for comics. You know, I came to
you look for them for the show.
Yeah, for the show, and also I created this comedy festival, I'm the executive producer of this Johnny Carson Comedy Festival in Johnny's hometown, which we'll be doing in June, the second year of the comedy festival.
Well, you know, by the way, you were one of the guys, one of the few guys, nice enough to just, when you were here, you gave me your cell number, and you said, if anything big's going on with David or anything, or you want to give me a call, give me a call. And I think I called you once and said, please get me some tickets.
Well, that was big, right?
Yeah, that was very nice of you.
And it's really hard to get tickets, but it just happened, the timing was perfect and everything.
Well, and we work for CBS. That should count for something, but yes. No.
Because, you know, David's, you know, all these years wants the people who, you know, been writing in to get the tickets.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to give them to the staff. We have 250 people on the staff.
Of course. And the people on the staff come in. And so I know, because we're in sort of entertainment.
So I shouldn't thank Eddie for covering my wife and daughter at this point?
No. Okay. But you used his number, too?
Absolutely. So, my daughter was in New York looking for schools, and allegedly, Eddie Brill hooked him up with tickets. I don't want to point any fingers.
So, but I mean, people who are in the business, they don't laugh as much. They're terrible audiences. It's not that we don't appreciate.
Cynical.
Yeah, it's not that we don't appreciate the jokes. It's just that we sit there and go, yeah, that's an excellent joke.
My God, that was funny.
Yeah.
My God.
All right. So now about you, on your stand-up, are you more topical?
I'm very much like Carlin. I mean, he was my hero, my friend. He was my hero, and I saw him on The Tonight Show, and I said, that's the guy who, you know, I think like. And later in life, we got to be very close, and he helped me a lot. And I talk a lot about the truth and honesty and advertising and the world. And, you know, it's, you know, I make you laugh, I make you think. And it's, I think if you loved Carlin for any reason, you love what I do.
Do you have like 12 dirty words? Because there's new ones.
Yeah, because you have to. You know, you just got to take it to the neck.
You got
to
stay up on it.
Number, you know, 14's too much.
Yeah. I actually have a favor I want to ask you, but I'll do it off the air. I'll call you afterwards. Is that number still good, or do you change it every 6 months when morning shows keep calling and asking for tickets?
No, now sorry. Think about it. How sad. I have the same number.
Oh, you do? Well, that's good.
Yeah.
No, are you sad that there are not more people stalking you to cause you to change?
Yeah, that's what it is. You know, that number's listed and nobody calls. No, it's not listed.
Hey, Eddie, we've heard so much about this Air Force One flyby on New York City that day. Were you affected by that at all? Did you know anybody?
No, I didn't even see it. I was indoors. A shame. But no, it's kind of scary. I mean, you know, we're a little sensitive over here. And, you know, you see a plane, an F-16 flying low, it scares a lot of people. You know, it's pretty crazy. You could have made a phone call. You know, hello, we're coming by, we're taking photos. Hope you don't mind. But I didn't see it, and it didn't really affect me. And I'm, you know, I mean, if this is the worst mistake the White House is doing, you know, that's okay with me, you know.
What would scare me a little, maybe, is getting on a plane and flying from New York to Seattle right now. They say airplane air is pretty nasty stuff with this flu going around.
And there's a lot of swine flu in New York.
Yeah.
What are you doing to your audience? Are you letting Mexicans? Dickinson?
Yeah, well, you know, I'll be...
Well, that's a fair question.
All weekend. You know, good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
And if Letterman suddenly comes out and can't talk, I mean, you know...
I know, it's weird. Well, you know what? If I can get an audience of dentists, they can understand me behind you hear big laughter. The good news is I got bumped up to first class because less people are flying, so... You know, that worked out beautifully.
And they use cleaner air up there, too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. More rarefied up there.
Eddie Brill. Actor and human rights activist Mike Farrell's new book, Of Mule and Man, may be the only book ever written about a book tour. You see, after the actors, who's best known for his starring roles in MASH and Providence, wrote his first book, Mike and Me, he embarked in a rental Toyota Prius, driving across the country, bringing attention to the book, as well as Greenpeace, the ACLU, Human Rights Watch, and many other groups that he endorses. What resulted from the journey? Of Mule and Man, which he has apparently decided is better promoted on the phone. He's probably done with book tours.
That's a little sore.
Mike Farrell, known to you also as Captain B.J. Honeycutt. Welcome to the Bob Rivers Show. Hello.
How are you doing, Bob?
Great. You?
And in fact, I haven't given up driving. I'll be up in Seattle in June.
If you will stop in and grace us with your presence for a longer discussion, we'd love to talk to you, because you are so active in so many things.
Well, thank you.
So that wasn't a yes.
Well, it's not up to me, but if I can work it out, I'd love to.
All right. So in the course of your tremendous journey across this great land of ours, what surprised you, what troubled you, what enchanted you, and what humbled you about our great country?
Well, what surprised me was the diversity and the fact that the so-called red state, blue state divide really doesn't exist, that people everywhere are pretty much the same with the same concerns, and really, whether they agree or disagree about political or social justice issues, they're open to discussion and respectful discussion. What troubled me was going through, in particular, the Ninth Ward, lower Ninth Ward in New Orleans, to see the devastation that could of Katrina that has not yet been addressed, and it's a scandal. What enchanted me, I suppose, was to go back to the diversity, to see the differences, the physical differences in the country, to go from the desert to the high mountains, to the sea coasts, to the lakes and the rivers. You see the utter and extraordinary beauty of this country. And I forgot the fourth point.
That would be humbling, but boy, that was really good, because Obama had to write them down.
Yes, he did, but he got them all.
Yeah. He did. Now, the last one was, what humbled you in this great land?
Oh, I think it continues to humble me to go into a place I've never been before and walk into a store and find dozens, sometimes tens of hundreds of people waiting in a library to meet me and hear what I have to say, primarily, I think, because of the extraordinary embrace of MASH. And to be able then to mix it up with people and talk about things that they care about and talk about things that I care about, it always moves me and extraordinarily to get that kind of reception. And
right. Now, when you're for human rights and you're for peace and you're against death and torture and things like that, but do you have to admit that the possibility of Sean Hannity being waterboarded makes you sort of want to reconsider the waterboarding thing, right?
I'm going to do Sean's show. I had a few things to say about him in the book, and I'm sure he's going to be happy to see me. I'm going to do his show. He calls me his favorite left-wing celebrity.
Uh-huh.
I may not be his favorite anymore.
Right. Here's another question for you. Do you think Obama is retreating fast enough for liberals from all of our military obligations? He doesn't seem to be retreating fast enough.
I'm not sure I understand what you mean by retreating.
The way that we're involved in so many different military endeavors, I think Bob's saying he gave the impression that we're going to be out pretty quick.
What he said was we're going to end the war in Iraq, and he's doing that. I think everybody understands it's going to take a while to do that. Nobody is happy about the fact that it's going to take as long as it does, but you unfortunately, can't just say, okay, everybody out.
Right. We can be anti-war, but you can't quit war cold turkey.
Well, you can't quit war irresponsibly, but I'm not happy with what he's doing in Afghanistan, and I'm hoping that what's happening behind the scenes in terms of the diplomatic approach is really where the emphasis is being put, and what Bush continued to disparage, nation building, is really what needs to be done in both Afghanistan and Pakistan. But we've got to have a platform from which to do it, and I think it ought to be more diplomatic than military.
You mentioned, Mike, you are humbled when people are waiting to hear you speak when they know you're coming to talk about these things in a library or something. I'm wondering what happens when you pull into Stuckey's Truck Town outside of Sioux Falls in your Prius and they don't know you're coming when you walk into a... you're a very recognizable guy. How do they treat you?
Oh, it's always wonderful. Sometimes, you know, the best part is when they don't either don't know me or don't act like they know me. But generally speaking, I get a lot of the head turns and people say, you know who you look like? Or, did I go to school with you?
All right. Mike Farrell in Los Angeles. We'll put a link to the book on our website, bobrivers.com.